I'm your host, Cinderella Field. Yes, that's really my name. Along with your co-host, Sandy Hunter. We are so excited to be here to share some insight about life, love, and relationships. So let's get to it. Good morning, Beverly. How are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
I am doing great. So, you want to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, because there's so much to tell, really and truly. I mean, you go from, you know, basically small neighborhood in Maryland to an entertainment attorney.
Well, it does seem like I've lived many different lives. And when I was writing my memoir, I was like, what to include, what not to include. Yeah, so I guess the short story is I did grow up in a very small town in Maryland. I was the granddaughter of a Southern Baptist minister, so I did grow up in the church. And it was a wonderful upbringing. I just have to say it was wonderful. And, you know, no one in my family ever divorced. I mean, and the one divorce I think that I remember happening was someone in our church. And it was really seen as a tragedy. It was really, we prayed about it. It was a terrible experience. I mean, I grew up everything wasn't terrific. We were middle class family. I saw aunts, uncles, grandparents, parents go through lots of difficulties. Whether it was health, economic, but what I saw through that and what they emulated for me was that those marriages and the families became stronger through those struggles and those challenges. And so that's really, I think it gave me strength, and certainly I think gave me sort of, I guess, the courage to sort of branch beyond my small town, go to college first in my family, go to law school. And then I just thought, wow, I had spent a summer in New York City, and I thought, that would be really exciting to go to New York City. So I went there, didn't expect that I would fall in love right away, get married 9 months later to a Jewish fellow, and we would go on to, I mean, we had our troubles too, but we would go on to have two children, two daughters, have good careers, buy our dream house. It really was our dream house. And then one day I found out he was having an affair, and about 3 months later, he was gone forever, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just wow. Because, I mean, it sounds like you had, you know, an idealistic childhood, and you were a big reader, and, you know, you spent your summers eating strawberries and building snow forts.
That's exactly
during the winter.
What I did. Were you there?
No, but I have, you know, I try to make sure that I know a little bit about my guests. And so, I mean, to me, you're the most fascinating person, because you do, when you go through something major like a divorce that you went through, I mean, you do have to figure out how to change. But why get married in the first place? Why get married today? Because you went through your divorce when? How many years ago?
Well, it was a long divorce. So he left at the end of Christmas time, right before Christmas, 2002. Sure. We were in divorce court for many years because I wanted to fight for my marriage. I wanted to stay married. Ultimately, it's very complicated, but we were in divorce court for many years. Finally, the divorce was final in 2009. And I essentially, when we had custody arrangements, the kids went back and forth, but primary custody was me with me. And I really became a single mother trying to keep it all together and raise the kids and, you know, pay the mortgage and keep it all going. At the end of 2013, I really couldn't afford the mortgage anymore. My second daughter, youngest daughter, was going off to college, and it really was the time to sell the house. And so I wound up moving to Savannah, Georgia. But yes, I am, to answer your question, I just wanted to finish the whole sort of story. But yes, I am. I could have, you know, I think a lot of people, I remember a neighbor saying to me, she had told me when I was going through my divorce, she said, I hope you don't become negative like a friend of mine. You don't become like carry this with you for the rest of your life and you become settle into negativity. And at times, you know, I would remember that and I would say, oh, I do feel pessimistic. I do feel negative. But I knew that I really wanted to keep working to get myself out of that. And it was a process. It was a long process to do that and eventually realize that I was doing so much raising the kids that I hadn't grieved and that I had to really go through that huge grieving process in order to get rid of some of that. But I've always been an optimistic person and I always felt like I wanted to get back to that person who could still see joy in my life. And, you know, I wound up becoming an advocate for other marriages. I was very, very sad, of course, that my marriage did not stay together. I wanted it to stay together. And I really thought, you know, if I fight for it and I go through this in court, it's going to happen. And then it didn't. So it was another gut punch saying, oh, so this is not God's plan for me. Well, why not? You know, I had to go through all of that. And then realize that I believe that God's plan was for me to become an advocate for marriage and for divorce reform and to find joy in doing that and helping to save other marriages.
And that is how I found you, because that is my heart as well. And I truly believe that that's God's plan for me, you know, and what else, you know, if anything else pops into it, I mean, it'll be his doing, not mine. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's, yes. And so that's how we connected, is I found Coalition for Divorce Reform just through researching. And we kind of became pen pals through email, right? And then we started talking about Charles Stanley because you had moved to the Atlanta area from New York, which is, I mean, it's still East Coast, but it is a change, right?
Well, I am actually in Savannah, but I went to see him before he passed away. A friend, I didn't even know there was a friend here who, she was a Charles Stanley fan too. And we did a pilgrimage one weekend to Atlanta because we just needed to hear him. And that was really through my mother before she passed away. I'm Catholic now and she remained Baptist. And she would always talk about this preacher on TV that I had to listen to. And I would sort of roll my eyes on the other end of the line thinking, right, you know, one of these, I don't know, these TV evangelists, I can't go there. And when I did, oh my gosh, just like, before I'd go to church on Sunday, I would listen to one of his sermons. So I'd get a double sermon on Sundays.
Well, he was quite good. And he had the most calming voice.
He did.
And he just...
And I just don't know how he could just flip to a passage in the Bible. And it was just, he knew right where it was. There was no sticky on the Bible.
No, he just did it. Isn't that amazing? And to be honest with you, when I was going through my divorce, and I mean, the divorce courts are crazy, in my opinion. There needs to be change for sure. And I would listen. I would take my laptop to bed with me, and I would listen to Charles Stanley and fall asleep to him because it would give me such peace. So...
No, I think you're right. I mean, I definitely in my journey to becoming more whole, obviously my faith has that's at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really go into that specifically in my memoir. I mean, I do touch on it, but I wanted it to be a broader memoir to appeal to many different audiences, not just Christian audiences. But that absolutely was central to my recovery. And I remember when I was going to divorce, I mean, I had this little printout. And I think it may have, I'm trying to remember whether it was, no, it couldn't have been from a Charles Stanley book, but it was somewhere I got a little printout of Psalm 23 and like folded it up and it was like in my wallet and I would take it out right before I would go into court. I'd go into the bathroom and I just would like, and that just became sort of my mantra because it just felt, it was a very dark place.
Just saying all of that, let's go back to, because when we talked a few weeks ago and decided on a topic, and we could not talk about this because, I mean, it all goes hand in hand. Don't you agree? I mean, love, marriage.
We could talk for hours.
Yes. And I hope that, just like I said in the beginning, I hope this will not be our first or last podcast because I think that you have so much to share with women and men, because that's what I always say this. I have this line that I say, life is no fairy tale, but it has its moments. The rest you better be prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree? Or as prepared as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. It's hard not to think of Cinderella when I'm talking to Cinderella. But yes.
Right? And I mean, growing up, and I didn't want to name my podcast, by the way, Cinderella Chats. I did not. I wanted to call it CC and Company. But the second part of the definition of Cinderella is taking something that's obscure and bringing it out into the light, basically, because obscure is another word for darkness. And that's what happened, and lifting it to honor and significance. And guess what? That's what the truth does. So yeah. I was like, yes. I tried to change it. And even I went to my children who are both very black and white and to friends and everything else. And they're just like, you are so, what are you thinking? You have to use that. You have to use your name because people just won't forget it. And then the chats part of it is short conversations because people don't listen to like long drawn out things anymore. I mean, it's sad, but they don't. And they don't read like they used to. And that's why we have memes and all that sort of things. And now we have podcasts and they will listen, which is fantastic. So, okay. So just talking about the Cinderella thing. So what did you think growing up marriage would be like? Because we said we were going to talk about why get married? Why get married today?
Right. So I have a lot of reasons why I think people should get married. And I gave a talk recently. Generally, my audience tends to be more midlife because midlife is in the title of my memoir. And as I said, my audience, my readership tends to be a little older. But I gave a talk to about 60 or 70, 20 and 30 year olds, most of whom were not married. So yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, I grew up with Cinderella. I read Cinderella to my kids. So in terms of my image, that's an interesting question because I will have to think back. Obviously, I thought about all that. I mean, you know, I love to play dress up. My kids love to play dress up. I still feel that it was actually something I was thinking about this morning. This goes off topic a little bit, but not really because it's related to marriage. And that is that I think being childlike, I think that really sort of I was attracted to it because I have a childlike spirit. And I think that for marriage today to work, I think you still have to have part of that. I mean, we talk about that as a Christian, having that childlike spirit. And I think that's sort of important to marriage too. And, you know, if you think about kids and some things that affect them don't, you know, sometimes they can roll with the punches. And I'm not talking about divorce because that's a whole other thing. That is a tough thing for kids to have to endure. But, you know, falling down and getting hurt and, you know, scraping themselves and they cry for a minute and then 10 minutes later they're off playing. So it's sort of that childlike spirit in knowing that the tough things are going to happen just because, as I said, I grew up with the whole Cinderella idea and marriage and whatever, but then I also saw marriage. Actually, obviously parents and things don't share everything with their kids, but I certainly hear my parents fighting. I certainly knew when there were problems that went on with certain aunts and uncles that wasn't shielded from me. I knew about it. I heard about it. I saw people praying about it. And then I saw beautiful things happen and couples becoming stronger. So I really sort of had both images of marriage when I was growing up. So it wasn't all one or the other.
That's really good. But I think, just having, the name that I do, and I watched it as a child every year when it came on. And I just thought, oh my gosh, one day I'm going to grow up and I'm going to marry the perfect person and he's going to take care of me for the rest of my life and we're going to have children and I'm going to cook dinner and, all the things that you think are going to happen, they don't,
Right. I do think for a lot of people that is the image because we have a culture that is so focused on romance and love. And just think about rom-coms. That is a genre, rom-coms. That's like, we're still focused on, there's your soulmate out there. It's the whole soulmate that we're out to find, our soulmate. And that's a mistake because people aren't thinking about the realities of a relationship and the things that a relationship goes through. So that's definitely something where we need to have. But then on the other hand, we have a culture that in some ways is opposed to hardship.
Yes.
Is opposed to suffering. So while we have this on one hand, we have the other part of the culture that everything's got to be an easy fix. We've got to have a pill. Pain is bad. Suffering is bad. Hard work. I still see, millennials working hard in their jobs. So I wouldn't say that's completely like a no-no. But I think in some ways, it's, we still think we can get rich quick. But it's not going to take a long time, or maybe we never will get rich. We still have that, we want it to happen now. And you see millennials changing job after job after job, not just saying, I'm going to stick with this one when it's uncomfortable, or I don't think that it's giving me everything that I need on my resume to get ahead as fast as I can get ahead. So we have all of that in the culture that impacts relationships because we're so primed to believe all that's true. And then we have a relationship which hits a speed bump, and it can be a tough speed bump, a hard speed bump. And we say, this is unnatural. It's not right. And if I can't fix it quick, then I need to move on. Because that's what we do in so many other areas. We just move on. So all of those things in our culture that weren't applied to relationships and marriage, now we've grafted them on to relationships and how we deal with problems and obstacles in relationships. And it's not the same thing.
No. And things are so different today than when you and I were growing up. We talked on the telephone, we met people just like you met your former husband. You worked with him. That's where you met him. And that's where things happened, is in your general vicinity of where you did life. And that is no longer the truth because of dating sites, because of social media, for Facebook. All of it. And I think that people now are so used to the telephone being in their hand, which is a computer. You can, get on there and basically find anything that you want, including a new wife or a new husband. That's why I am where I am, is because of that. And this weekend, I was at dinner with a friend of mine and two guy friends of hers. It was a business dinner. And the guy pulled out the phone and he said, this is why we are where we are. And both of these guys have been married forever to the love of their life, they call them. And they say, don't get me wrong. I mean, don't think it's like that every day, because it's not. But they grew up in a time that you stuck things out. You worked through things. I mean, I remember teaching my children, if they came in and said, so-and-so's doing this to me, or so-and-so's doing that to me, mommy, 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 you know what I would say? You need to go back out there and figure it out, because I'm not going to, my thought process was, I'm not going to be at their desk when they're 25, you know? So right. I have to teach them now how to work through things. I mean, and we don't work through things anymore. It's so comfortable to say something nasty or negative through social media or through your phone. And then just what they use, the term is ghosting. And there's another terminology they use too, YOLO. I mean, when I was going through what I was going through in the divorce, I was like, what the heck is YOLO? You only live once. Well, if you're a Christian, right. You don't just live once. We don't believe that. And I mean, it's just like, oh my gosh, if you only live once, what would you do? So, and then they have Instagram and all this social media stuff where everything looks perfect. Oh, and filters, let's not leave those out, where you look perfect all the time. I mean, do I look perfect this morning or do you? No. We're just who we are.
No.
And I told you last minute, oh, you don't have to worry about, we're not going to do a visual podcast this morning. We're just going to do audio because we changed, you know, we went from Roadcaster to Riverside, which you didn't know. And so, I mean, I don't know if you want to share what you're wearing, Beverly, but you didn't have to worry about doing your hair, right?
Actually, a red silk kimono.
It's just so different today, because I think, just like you said, they're looking for a soulmate and perfection, and that just does not happen.
Exactly. They are looking for perfection. And I think it's important. And when I was speaking to this group of young people, I titled my talk, you know, are you panicked about the world and politics? Do something even crazier. Get right. married. And they were like, what? and I was like, did anybody ever see War of the Roses, the mm-hmm. movie? A couple of hands went up, not many. And I said, well, go watch it. That I don't need to tell you what happened. That was what happened to me. And I'm
me
here
too.
To tell you, I'm still positive about getting married, and I think it's the best thing that you can do. And despite everything that's going on in the world, despite, can I trust this person? How can I bring up a child in this? And one of the reasons why I said this to him, to them, I said, is because one of the greatest reasons you can get married is it is going to be the most, perhaps the most fertile ground, if you don't have like a health problem or something, and many of you will anyway, but even so, it will be the most fertile ground for suffering that you may have ever encountered, and with the most challenges. And I said, if you embrace it and you understand it from the get-go, and I think that's why it's important that I was able to share these things with this group, because it could be that some of them have never heard this perspective on marriage, and especially as a reason to get married, that this is tremendous ground for spiritual growth.
Absolutely.
That it is absolutely, it's exciting, because if you do want to grow in wisdom, you do want to grow spiritually, then facing the challenges in our society of getting married and all that that brings is going to be the best training ground for you. And beyond society's, you know, limited, pleasure and happiness. And it's all fine. I mean, happiness, pleasure, I mean, all of those things are good. I love going to the movies. I love binge watching certain shows. I mean, it's not about, I think some people feel that if you were a Christian and you're advocating this, then you're dour and everything is so serious and so, well, you know, I can't do this and I can't do that. It's it's like it becomes a list of rules that you have to follow. And I think that, I think, you know, as Christians, one of the things that we need to show people is no, we're certainly still people who are very engaged in the world and happy to be engaged in the world with art and culture and music and all of those things.
And mistakes.
And yes. and taking them on and saying, this is fantastic. This is great because I'm gonna learn something from this. And that was not something that I sort of knew it. I would have to say I knew these things intellectually. And you can know them intellectually, but you can't really plant them in your heart and in your life in terms of really interacting with them and growing until it leaves the whole intellectual sphere alone. You know, you've got to like take that leap and saying, okay, I kind of get this, but I don't really see how it can work. And you just have to let yourself go there and play with it and say, okay, I'm going to accept it and I'm going to try it and I'm going to see what happens.
Well, I mean, it does say in the Bible that we're not meant to be alone. I mean, God did, you know, give Adam woman because he said, you won't do good by yourself. So, I mean, for goodness sakes, I don't think he really, this is going to sound terrible. Did you really think that through? Because, you know, I said something to that effect one time in Bible study fellowship, and they looked at me like I had 10 heads or something. But it was just like, truly, we're so different. I mean, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. We can multitask and men cannot. Men want to fix everything. And we just want you to listen. We don't want you to fix anything, you know?
But it is the biggest challenge because we also live with these people. It's not like we have a friend who like, oh, we ignore some tick that one of our friends has. I didn't mean physical. I mean, just, you know, some kind of a something that just sort of rubs us the wrong way, but we don't see them all the time. And we do certain things with them and not other things. And we can sort of keep the friendship going, but living with a person full time, all the time, you know, it's just, there's no escaping it. There's no escaping it. I think God did know what God was doing because this is the biggest challenge. And so we were given, this is a gift.
So because it's for them to figure out, but they know that life does not come and marriage does not come without problems. And I do think that you're right, Beverly, that I think God intended for it to be that way. Because, I mean, that's the way we have to deal with life. And I think he gave it to us so that we could see what the true relationship with him is. I mean, it's not always perfect, the relationship I have with God. Right. I tell him I've had some interesting conversations with him, including slamming my fist down on the dashboard and going, really? Really? Why? Disappointment comes in marriage. Good things come with marriage. And you get to share that with another person. And you know, you may not like that they smack, but that's who they are. You have to remember what you're there for. I mean, it says till death do we part, does it not? I mean, it's supposed to be a covenant, but it's no longer that. It's just a contract that you can get out of easily. And the mindset, and this was even on Fox News this last week, I missed it. But Sandy, my co-host that is with me sometimes, she has said, you know, I hear people all the time say, especially young men, I can't wait to get married and get the first marriage over with so I can get out of it and find my true love. Well, guess what? Isn't that sad? And it's 20-something-year-olds that are saying this. I mean, I have some interesting conversations when I talk to guys in that bracket, you know, the 20-year-olds. And I was doing some research for our talk this weekend, and it's 20-something-year-olds that get divorces so quickly. And I think it's because the technology they've grown up with.
Well, it's technology, and it's also the fact that so many of these young people, they don't have the mentors from their own family. It is generational.
Yes.
It is, you know, I'm reading a book now. I won't say what the book is, but this woman came from a family where her mother, I think, was married a couple of times. The grandmother was divorced. It's generational. And then, of course, it just seemed to me like, well, it's inevitable. I mean, like, I wasn't surprised she got divorced. So I think for so many people, it is generational because they don't see. They have, you know, in fact, I have a friend, and I just wrote about this in an article. I have a friend who's around my age, and we were talking about one of my articles or something, and she said she's never been married, but she said, there was no one in my growing up, in my family, that I could look to as an example of a good marriage. She mm-hmm. had none. She had mm-hmm. none. And I guess I can think in terms of young people because there's so many divorces and because it has become generational. It wasn't generational necessarily with her, even though there were divorces. So that really shocked me that so many people, even in my generation, didn't grow up with that. So I think it's very important that one of the reasons why I think it's important that young people today get married is to make that commitment that they are going to start being healers in our marriage culture. Because so many children and so many of them did not grow up with models of what marriage looks like and what marriage looks like when you hit a trouble spot and how you get over it and how you get through it, that they need to model that for their own children so that we will start to have a generation of children who will grow up with parents who stay married. So I said, you've got to be part of the change. Mm-hmm. Yes, we need divorce reform. Yes, there's so many things that we need, but you can be part of the change for the next generation yourselves. And that can be part of your mission. And that's like, and it's not like grit your teeth and see it through. And, you know, because I'm sorry, we get that so much from certain writers in the culture. Oh, yes, they just, you know, people who are talking like I am and you are, they just want women to stay stuck in unfulfilling, abusive marriages. I mean, that's just, I'm so tired of hearing that cliche that I'm just like rolling my eyes because it's just, it's so negative, it's so overblown, and it doesn't help anything. It just doesn't help anything. And I would never advocate people staying in abusive relationships. Even if they don't get divorced, they can separate. So that's not what I'm talking about. And people try and peg me into that all the time and say, oh, she just wants this. That is not true. So I feel like even though we're not talking about that, I need to go on record. I hate to have to go on record
right?
all the time to say I'm not in favor of abuse, but it seems to be what you have to do in our culture and you'll still get be accused of it. So that's not what I'm saying to young people. No, that's not what I'm advocating. And it doesn't have to be that way. That's just silly. That's just silly. That's just somebody with a political agenda trying to keep things the way they are, which is in a very bad state.
Well, I think that sometimes, I mean, just because, you know, I've stuck my toe in the water of being an advocate for marriage and, you know, divorce being the last thing that a person does. And, you know, hopefully we can talk about that at some point because, I mean, I think that you're pretty much an expert at it, Beverly, the things that you went through and Coalition for Divorce Reform. I mean, how do we save the family? The family is in such big trouble. I mean, you said yourself in an article that you did that the Trump administration needs a family czar. And I agree because they can fix or try to fix all these other things. But until we get back to the foundation and the root of what is best, I mean, it's our families.
Oh, I think so. I think it's just, it's like good money after bad. I mean, when you throw money at something and then it doesn't work, why do you just keep throwing money at it? why don't you go and say, gee, could there be something else going on here? But that requires people of courage. Yes. To stand up and be people of courage. And I think that's, we need some leaders who are going to be leaders of courage to do that.
In order to heal what is broken. I mean, I totally agree with you. Yeah. And it takes mentors and people speaking up. But just like you just said, you have to go on record. I had women follow me to the restroom and start telling me, well, why do you want to try to, why do you think that fault divorce needs to be an issue? Let me tell you about what my husband did. And I said, oh my gosh. I mean, so you do have to go on the record of saying that that's not right to be abused. I mean, it's not. That's not what is being said. But it's just like we have to start talking again about the positive, wonderful things that happen when two people come together in a marriage, and even the bad things, I mean, you still, you come out and go, oh my gosh, we survived that, instead of we gave up on it, you know?
Well, I think it requires people stepping forward too, like at my church, and I've written about this as well, you know, every year we have a mass and celebration of gold and silver anniversaries. And it's wonderful. It's just absolutely wonderful to see. It hurt me the first time I went. I was like, oh, it was really hard. And then I realized that there was such beauty in it. And it's just become a beautiful thing for me now and not a painful thing. But this happens like once a year. You know, so we celebrate the 25 year, you know, and the 50, you know, and once a year, and then everybody turns on to the next thing. No, we need to have this all year long. We need to have this visibility. I just wrote an article about Black Marriage Day, which was celebrated at the end of March. And I know the woman that started this about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. I can't even remember now. And it's an annual event. And so it's something that needs to be ongoing, but that's annual. But there are offshoots now of retreats and week-long events and all of that. And so that's what I think needs to happen generally in our culture. We need to start having the visibility of those marriages, not just one time a year and we see in the bulletin this event's going to happen. No, this is we need to start building a culture of marriage.
Absolutely. I mean, that is absolutely the truth. And it needs to be done on a daily basis. I mean, people at church, the older they get, they think that, oh, I'm just done. But those married couples that you're talking about, they could do so much for everyone that's married or thinking about getting married just in their community of yeah.
Oh, I absolutely yes. believe that. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, maybe that's something that we can push on at some point and talk about. And maybe that's what...
How do we get that started?
Well, maybe we get it started right here. And just opening the door to talk about it. And then you and I can talk further about it. Because I think something needs to be done. I mean, during my divorce, I had the opportunity to go and work at a local hospital in the Women's Center. And I can tell you this, that people aren't getting married today, but they're still having children. And I mean, and then they just go their separate ways. And then they have more children with the next person. And it's like, what is really going on? Because it's not, I mean, from what I said and learned, I felt like Lucy, remember? And she had her little tin cup and the psychiatrist thing. And I was like, I need my tin cup and, you know, my sign and the black wig. And let me just listen and try to help you. Because ending it doesn't mean that, I mean, you're going to go on and probably have another relationship. And you're going to take all this stuff with you. It makes it harder, you know?
Well, that's the other thing too, is that, and it just sort of goes back to what we already talked about, is people sitting with their pain. So it's not only sitting with challenges in the marriage, mm-hmm. okay, and not running away, but it is those people who have relationships that do fall apart, and maybe they weren't the cause with an affair partner or something like that, but they weren't able to continue to stay married because of our divorce mm-hmm. laws. Maybe they do want to get married again. I mean, there's some people, you know, like within the Catholic Church, this whole growing movement of standers who mm-hmm. are standing for their marriage no matter what. But people of other faiths or other convictions want to have another opportunity and do have another opportunity. Regardless, for everyone, it requires a period of sitting with that pain. And afterwards, rather than saying, I can't sit with this pain, I need to go on and find another partner to make me happy, to make the pain go away. And we know that pleasure and excitement of new things, all of that can momentarily be a pacifier for the deep emotional pain that we feel from the breakup of a relationship. And it's not going to last forever, and it's only going to spill over into another relationship. But people in our culture, you know, don't do that. They do just, oh, I got to get out of this one because I've already got the next one lined up.
Yes.
And I have to move on to mm-hmm. that one. And that is so prevalent in our culture. People not taking the time to say, whoa, let me step back. Let me heal first. Let me examine what happened and figure this out before I just get myself tangled up in a new relationship. And that's something we don't do either, because we don't like to sit with pain. And it's like, oh, what am I going to twiddle my thumbs here and like look at the ceiling? but that's how people view it, unfortunately.
That is how most people view it. Well, I must be, you know, I must enjoy pain because I've stayed by myself. And this is really the truth. During the divorce, I got an email from the other woman telling me that if I weren't, you know, basically something wrong with me from a psychological standpoint, I would just move on woman to woman. This is what I needed to do, was move on. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? You have no idea. I mean, covenants are very serious. If you're a believer, covenants are a serious thing. And not just that, but commitment should be a serious thing. I mean, what if I said to my child, I just don't want you around anymore? I wonder if anybody's yeah. ever really thought about that one, you know? And it's just like, you can't do that. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that you're a great person to talk about every bit of this stuff. And I mean, I just do. So what's the one thing, besides just being real in a relationship and the suffering and the spiritual growth, what's the one thing that you would tell the 20-year-olds or the people that, you know, are single, you know, again and hoping to find love again? What would you tell them?
Oh boy, there's so much. Well, we talked about suffering and challenges mm-hmm. and how all that's good for spiritual mm-hmm. growth. But actually, I think what's true, and it's not only, you know, we hear in our culture, well, trust the science, okay? We won't get into what that means, okay, in so many different contexts. But we know that people are very much about convince me with science, convince me with the research, okay? So I would say to those young people, okay, you're very much about that. Go look it up. Go look at the social science mm-hmm. research. Go see what makes people happy and what makes people more miserable. And you will see that the happiest people in our mm-hmm. culture are the people who are married. You will see that the people who have families, they're the happiest in our culture. They are also thriving the most economically. We hear about, oh, just stay single and don't get married and you can have all the money yourself. No, married couples are economically healthier than single people who have you know, great careers. So if you want to follow the science, okay, follow the science, because marriage is going to make you happier. You have better odds of being happier, being physically healthier, being less depressed,
living longer,
being more economically well off. All of those mm-hmm. things, your chances increase, really. It's not just a point or two. Your chances increase greatly. So take, you know, we talk about the stock market, and let's not talk about the stock market going down, but we think about sure. things like that. We think about, oh, it's got to go up because that's progress. Well, if you want to play the statistics here, getting married is a really smart thing to
good
do
for you overall. It is yeah. and good for our
so
society.
I would say, yeah, like, wow, isn't that cool? Because it's counterintuitive in terms of how the culture presents it.
Exactly.
The culture presents it as the burden and the kids and the bills and the, I mean, and oh, and you have to live with someone and put up with them and all this. You know, we present it that way. It's literally, it's counterintuitive. It's like, nah, that's not the reality.
No, it's not. I think that's a good place for us to stop for the time being.
Okay.
And I think it's a great place. So marriage, why get married? Because in general, it is good for you and good for our world. Wouldn't you say that?
Yes.
And agree?
Perfect.
Yes,
perfect.
Yes.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, hopefully we'll talk again, because we have so much to talk about, Beverly.
And I enjoy talking to you.
And I enjoy talking to you too. Have a beautiful day and a beautiful week, and we'll talk again soon. Go get married, people.
You too.
Go get married.
Thank
yes.
you. Uh-huh. Get married.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the show today, share it with your friends so they can listen in to our conversations about life, love, and relationships. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Cinderella Chats, the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. We look forward to our Tuesdays together, and know you will too.